CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers now. Eamon, we're already seeing the fallout from this hack.
A ransomware attack in Iowa, this time targeting New Cooperative.
Hi, and welcome back to The Cyber Savvy Farmer. You're now on part two of this special four-parter on the matter of cybersecurity on the farm, and I'm your host for this segment, Dave Bedard. Now, last episode, we left off on a discussion of the risks to farmers and the ag industry from ransomware, a particularly creepy brand of cyber attack in which a user can be locked out of his or her data and even their equipment until a ransom is paid to a hacker. Now, by this time, you might already be wanting to run off to a scrapyard to try and find an old tractor or thresher that's as far away from the Internet of Things as possible, but it's worth restating that the level of tech in today's equipment has its own safety and security value, too. And if you need an example of that, well...
Operation Center допомагає заощаджувати час і уникати помилок, оскільки ви можете надсилати машині інформацію про налаштування за допомогою бездротового зв'язку.
That's a clip from a promotional video from John Deere Ukraine on the company's John Deere Operations Center system. We put that in there to jog everyone's memory about a news item from back this last spring when invading Russian soldiers were alleged to have looted a John Deere dealership in southeastern Ukraine and taken combines and other equipments from there off into Chechnya. According to the report, the companies knew that much because the equipment had GPS to track its location. And it had geofencing, which, rather ironically, pretty much bricked those stolen machines, that is, by rendering them completely inoperable beyond a certain point, much like shopping carts in a store parking lot. Now, of course, some may argue that the whole story just goes to show that modern farm equipment can, in fact, be disabled remotely for any reason, good or bad. So before we get ourselves too far stuck in that logical spiral, we want to move over today to talk about the actual cybersecurity risks on the Canadian farm. For that, we go now to a conversation with researcher Dr. Janos Bochner and cybersecurity analyst Ritesh Kotak. These gentlemen are working with the Community Safety Knowledge Alliance, that's the lead organization on the Cybersecurity Capacity in Canadian Agriculture Project. That's a federally funded campaign to assess, reinforce, and promote cybersecurity across Canada's ag sector. Let's have a listen. Of course, we're going to be talking more in this series about the possible motives behind cybercrime in the ag sector and, you know, ways we can build resilience against that. But we should talk first about the points of entry where a third party can disrupt a farm or its business. You know, probably as good a place to start as any is with the most common threats that the general public sees. You know, is a farm family in a remote or rural area any more or less at risk for the sorts of crime we hear about in bigger centers? I'm thinking, you know, identity theft, financial scams, you know, phishing with a PH, that kind of thing.
Well, the simple answer is no. And the reason for that is cyber criminals really don't discriminate. They kind of lay the trap and they want to go as broad as possible. Now, yes, there are attacks that are highly sophisticated and targeted. But generally, it doesn't matter whether you're in an urban setting or you're in a rural setting. If you're connected to the internet, if you're using IoT connected devices, if you're using any sort of technology, and let's face it, more and more of our lives are digital, especially in the last few years. We went from a physical world to a digital world, and now we're kind of in this convergent world. And we're all using everything from email, Wi-Fi, connected devices, equipment on the farm. And it doesn't discriminate whether you're in a rural or urban setting. So everybody is vulnerable. Yes, the more devices you have connected, the more time you spend online, statistically, the probability increases, but that doesn't mean that you're not going to be victimized by cyber attacks just because you live in a rural setting. Everybody's vulnerable.
Ritesh makes a great point. You know, there's an old saying, security through obscurity. That no longer applies. because some of our you know, cyber criminals are focusing on things like targeted attacks on large corporations, doesn't mean that a shotgun approach to a bunch of consumers, rural dwellers, farmers, others within the ag ecosystem isn't going to happen. As we move forward and see more and more artificial intelligence enabled exploits, it becomes more likely that some of those things can really be amplified to scale so that more and more people could potentially become victims of at least attempts at different kinds of cyber exploits.
Mm-hmm. I think what I was wondering about risk earlier, I guess I was just thinking that maybe perhaps it was less likely that you know, that someone who's, you know, making thousands of, you know, fake Revenue Canada robocalls in a week would you know, position themselves in, you know, to be hitting a sort of area where the population's in just the dozens or the hundreds, as opposed to somewhere where they could get you know, where they could access somebody who's willing to drop off a bunch of iTunes gift cards for them, you know, within a few minutes or a few hours.
Yeah, and logically that does make sense. But even with these robocalls and spam, which has, I don't know about you, but I think it's gone out of control in some cases. The amount of spam calls that I personally get, it really does hit a. It strike a nerve, essentially. But no, these fraudsters and hackers don't care, especially with the robocalls. These are automated systems, and even with spam and kind of trying to get people to click on links that have malware or some sort of ransomware embedded within it, they don't really care. They don't target and say these are rural email addresses and these are urban email addresses or phone numbers. It doesn't matter. A lot of these things are automated. That's why you'll just get phone call after phone call, message after message, with the goal of getting you to click or do something. And once you do, I think a lot of us have gone these calls, and that is when you then get patched into a real person somewhere in the world who then tries to convince you to give up your information or figure out ways of extorting you. And I think that is kind of what we are seeing. But from the targeted side, you know, you make a great point on is not everything is just, let's just throw out a net and see what we catch. There are elements of individuals being targeted. I believe there's a report out recently by the Canadian Cybersecurity Center that talked about how cybercrime has gotten personal. These hackers and these fraudsters, once they get into your system, are doing their due diligence on an individual, seeing what's available open source, seeing who this person is that has now been infected, and then targeting their approach to convince you to pay up, saying, we're going to release this information to your clients. We know that it's going to cost you X amount of money, but you know, pay us this and we will give you a decryption key. It's gotten personal. So I think it kind of starts off broad, but once they have you, they start doing their homework and they make it very believable and adding that element of urgency. That's what they want, urgency. So you do something about it. In other words, turn over money, iTunes gift cards, or information.
Two important points Ritesh just made there, Dave. One is, cyber criminals aren't all the same. Some of them are working for large, really well-resourced criminal gangs, as it were, and others are smaller-scale people who are, you know, trying to make a buck on their own by using different kinds of tools that are available, whether it's ransomware as a service or other kinds of tools. It's hard to predict whether any one individual might be targeted by a random shotgun approach to a lot of people in an area, or whether they might be targeted specifically because perhaps some of their information that was gathered through other kinds of criminal activities, a bill stolen from a mailbox or something else, starts to be stitched together into a targeted attempt at fraud against that individual. The other thing is things are changing all the time. And as Ritesh said, that sense of urgency really concentrates the pressure on the individual. And if we're thinking about busy times of years for producers, whether it's harvesting or whether it's seeding, etc., their attention might not be on cybersecurity. So that urgency and that believability of something might catch them unaware, and then that's a hook.
Yeah, no, you make a great point. And I think that we've seen all the documentaries where just goes to show the sophistication of some of these operations. You kind of see these centers, they kind of look like call centers, but they're literally hackers for hire. And in some cases, they don't even know that what they're doing. They think that they have legitimate jobs. And it just goes to show the sophistication, the funding of some of these operations. And that is what we are up against. And this is why data and protecting your data and privacy and cybersecurity is so important in our fight against these hackers and fraudsters.
Now, if we were to zoom in from the general to the specific, talking about data, if it's a farmer's agronomic data that I want as a hacker, you know, where's the best spot for me to get it? Obviously there are these sort of general purpose sort of methods, it's starting with a phone call, starting with an email. But if it's that agronomic data that I want, you know, is it even practical for me to be trying to access the machines that are collecting it? Or is it just easier to get it from where it's been stored?
There's an app for that. it's probably the best way to think about this. Here's the thing is that traditionally we've seen, let's take tractors, for example, right? We got tractors that had computer components on it. That is no longer the case. There are now computers with tractor components on it. So it's kind of flipped, right? And if we think about an everyday example, like, you know, look at Teslas, for example. They're literally data collection machines. And there literally is an app for that. And the reason for that is there's ways for farmers to automate some of their operations, to get real-time analytics and to know what's working and what is not working. Well, that is where I would start, is kind of where that data is accessible, where it's stored. So it might be stored by a third party, but how is it being now accessed by the end user? And the way it's being accessed is probably through some sort of mobile application that usually only requires a username and password. That's where phishing comes in, where I can get somebody to click on something, steal their credentials, and now I got access to that data. There is a second component to this, and the second component is third parties. Is that data being sold to third parties? Is it being aggregated by third parties? And what protection measures are actually being put in place? The all-encompassing I agree button. When you click on it, what are you actually agreeing to? So maybe it's not the user that gets breached, but these third parties that are aggregating this data as well. So if I'm a sophisticated hacker, or I want this type, or I'm a I want to do some sort of state sponsored attack, or just know what's being produced, what's not being produced to have some sort of economic advantage, that's where I'm going. I'm trying to get to the user. And I'm trying to get to those third party data aggregators.
And sometimes what could happen is some malware could be inserted into some kind of a process that could be vendor owned or part of a storage system. And nobody knows for some time until all of a sudden an exploit takes place. That exploit could affect only the vendor, or that exploit could affect consumers of services, products, or purchasers of subscription from that vendor. So in the United States, for example, we had the big SolarWinds event not too long ago. Some malware ended up as part of a network software upgrade across multiple systems in the United States, and that caused all kinds of havoc. So it's really important to understand that there are a bunch, as Ritesh is saying, there are a bunch of different ways in that people can take, and as a result, there are a bunch of different responsibilities that we can all be thinking about, whether it's at the farm level, how do I pay attention to what's going on in my business? Or what are some of the questions I can ask to the vendors and suppliers that I use to do as much due diligence as I can and really invite them to be accountable for the services that they're providing?
Because that does actually sound like a real cause for concern, too. Because, you know, if I've invested in like a well-known, credible name brand system, you know, that collects and analyzes field data or what have you, and I've just installed it on my computers and on my smartphone and my tablet or whatever as a straight-up plug-and-play, no questions asked, you know, one would assume that with the brand name in there, that there's at least some basic level of encryption or protection that I'm also buying when I buy this system, but that may not even be the case.
The question now becomes is, are you actually enabling all the security features that you're paying for? I can't believe the amount of times that I have had these conversations with different vendors, small businesses, and they always ask, Ritesh, how do I further protect the data within my organization? And I was like, well, did you enable A, B, and C? They're like, how much is that going to cost me? I was like, you're paying for it already. It comes standard, it comes stock with a lot of these pieces of software and hardware. So step one is make sure that you're actually enabling this stuff and talk to the vendor. The vendor is there, the person you purchased it from. It is not in their best interest if you get breached or hacked. So they're there to assist. There's also another issue as well. And you mentioned buying from credible companies. Well, what is credible? And are you doing your due diligence? One thing that I've seen is that within agriculture, especially more of the independent farmers, is when you go to buy enterprise or commercial grade systems or software, it is expensive. It is 3 to 4 times more in some cases than consumer-based systems. And you get features, you get enterprise features, they're more ruggedized. But a lot of people will say, this is a lot of money. Maybe I can just go on this website and purchase a particular drone for irrigating or inspecting my crops. Well, here's the problem when you do these types of things is that there may be security faults. They may actually be bugged. We've seen that as well, depending on where you purchase them from. And they might not have the same backing of automated security updates. I always tell people, take out your phone, look at the app store, the respected app store. And when you see you got like 50 updates, those updates aren't new features. They're security updates. And you don't get that same robust, continuous security updates if you're not buying from credible vendor. So yes, it's more expensive, but you're getting that additional security, and make sure that you're getting that additional security, that you're turning it on. You're paying for it. You might as well use it.
Ritesh is getting at a really important vulnerability, things not being configured properly. That turns out to be, you know, a really big vulnerability for all kinds of individuals and businesses. So taking the time to understand, how do I configure this in a way that's going to make the most of the investment that I've made in this piece of equipment for my operation. The other side of the coin, you could probably argue, is what can I do to make sure I understand how best to use this software, this equipment? I'm going to ask my vendor. I'm going to ask them to help me make sure that I'm configuring things as well as they can be configured based on their best advice so that I can make the best use of my investment. And there's also a case for vendors thinking about how they can support end users really effectively so that everyone wins in the process.
Now, moving on from if we move on from the field collection of data to other livestock, to other ag operations, say, for instance, indoor production, livestock barns, greenhouses, that kind of thing. I mean, you know, there's basically systems, there's the systems that are available now that you can use to control the intensity of your lights, the air circulation and what on your barn, that I'm assuming are also either, you know, controllable through a tablet, controllable through a smartphone or what have you. Even just cutting the power to a barn or a greenhouse, you know, seems like an obvious way to do some damage there if a hacker really wanted to. But how likely is that to happen, I guess, is the question.
So recently, Janos, you and I were at a conference, and I remember going outside and grabbing a coffee with you, and you had a fantastic example regarding barns and chickens, and just how a change in temperature, and you had some fantastic examples of can have a massive impact. So maybe I'll turn it over to you to start us off on this one.
You bet, Ritesh. I was visiting a big poultry operation about this time last year. Very experienced producer, sitting down together with the family after having toured the barns actually. And I said, well, you know, tell me, what would happen if your system goes down? Well, you know, if it's the summertime, if the weather's not too hot, I can manually open up some of the ventilation in the barn. And he showed me how he can do that. Well, what if it's cold? Well, that would be more of a problem. Chickens could freeze in, you know, 15, 20 minutes, or they could die of heat stroke quickly on a really hot day. Well, what would you do if your system went down? I noticed your system's really beautiful, very high-end system. It's right at the front of the barn. What would you do? And again, very experienced producer, generations and generations of farming experience in this family. And, you know, the fellow said, well, I'd call my electrician. Now, they're not too far from town, but my thought was the electrician wasn't going to be 5 minutes away. And the electrician who installed the system might not necessarily be somebody who can get it back up and running again if a cyber incident was behind the system going down.
So looking at the question of whether there's precedent for willful attacks against these sorts of systems, though, if I've got a system that allows me to regulate feed input or nutrient input, water input, climate control, the lights and whatnot in my barns or in my greenhouses, are there precedent for people to, you know, sort of willfully access that in order to go in and mess stuff up?
Yeah, so to answer your question, absolutely, that's a possibility. And here's the thing, just think about all the things, as you mentioned, that are connected. And when you have all these things that are connected, there is room for it essentially to be exploited. So yes, it makes our life convenient, but there's a price to pay for that convenience. And we have seen malicious actors hack into devices, maybe not so much from a agriculture sector, and we've seen hacks in agriculture, but a few years ago, there was a really scary situation where web cameras that were being used to monitor, like baby monitors, essentially, were hacked. And what these hackers were able to do was literally put voices through these microphones and speakers and say, I got you. I'm going to do all these terrible things, and literally scare the parent to think, oh my God, is somebody in my house? And a bunch of 911 calls were made, and I was well documented. And it just goes to show that malicious actors are out there. The more things that we have connected, the more things that we don't keep updated or that aren't configured properly, the more likely you are to be essentially victimized in one way, shape, or form. And we're seeing more and more of this, and it's becoming easier and easier given the fact that these updates are becoming more frequent and less people are doing it, especially in a commercial setting.
We've seen before examples of, you know, physical attacks on barns, for instance. We've seen cases where people have gone in to occupy or sit in a barn and whatnot. So it's only logical to assume that folks who are interested in disrupting an operation in that respect would also be interested in being able to do so in the virtual space. And now we've also seen that cyber attacks further up the supply chain can disrupt businesses back at the farm level as well. There was the ransomware attack at JBS recently that basically caused those plants in both Canada and the US to stop accepting deliveries. There was the cyber attack on L'Union des Producteurs Agricoles in Quebec, which cascaded back onto a lot of the local and regional level organizations. Even just this last week, as we speak, there was a case at Maple Leaf Foods. We don't know exactly what happened there, but they said it was a cybersecurity incident that did have the potential to spill back on their hatcheries and other barns. You know, I guess the question is, we're starting to see these attacks. They're here. They're happening. They're now. I guess the question is what do farmers need to be aware of at that level?
I think the best way to think about this is you start right from the beginning, and that is the farm. And then you think about what's the end, which is the plate, the consumer. So it's kind of this concept from securing that entire supply chain. This is why this is so important. And I think the Sobeys and which is owned by Empire Companies, and the Maple Leaf Foods incident is a wake up call across the industry. It's a wake up call to Canadians as well to see when malicious actors are determined, they can take down massive organizations. These aren't small companies. These are large companies. They got personnel that probably deal with IT cybersecurity related incidents. They got deep pockets in a sense that they'd be able to hire in consultants and experts to help them mitigate against some of these attacks. And they went down, and that had an impact coast to coast to coast. Prescriptions that couldn't be filled, and payments that couldn't be made when customers were getting ready to check out. So that has opened up a huge vulnerability and a discussion that we need to have. Right now, there's no real legislation that says you must have a cybersecurity plan in place, that you must, the United States, for example, right now, the Biden administration is talking about whether you pay ransomware or not. That's a whole other conversation, but they're at least having discussions. We're not really having those discussions in Canada when it comes to a agriculture or in a commercial setting. And it shows. It's kind of a Wild West right now. And case in point, the Sobeys going down, Maple Leaf Foods getting attacked. That should be one of those key moments where we say, okay, what are we going to do in this situation? What type of mechanisms are we going to put into place? What type of reporting structure are we going to have? And how are we going to really look at this? This is not just the end user or the customer, but securing the entire supply chain. And until we have that discussion, malicious actors are going to keep exploiting these vulnerabilities within the agriculture sector.
And two things that come from that too, as Ritesh is saying, one is it's already starting to happen. We can go beyond Maple Leaf. We can go beyond JBS. There's NMR in the UK, the Australian Wool Exchange, New Cooperative in Crystal Valley in the US around this time last year. It's happening. The other point there, if we think about a supply chain and the Canadian agricultural sector, it's really at the intersection of a bunch of critical infrastructure. So it is itself a critical infrastructure. It's at the intersection of a bunch of critical infrastructures. So if you think about the analogy to, a field and the soil conditions, you're really talking about an ecosystem. Everything's interacting with each other. You're getting all kinds of feedback loops. Things, bring great food to our plates, but they need energy inputs and they need financial inputs and all kinds of other things to do the work that they do. So if we start to think about it as an ecosystem instead of an individual farm or an individual business, it starts to shine a light on how important it is to think in a whole of system way. And as Ritesh is saying, to start to, work together to identify some key vulnerabilities that can be addressed to create some positive momentum and make things a little bit safer every single day you work on the problem.
Janosz, I think you would agree that we all have skin in the game. This is not a one size fits all. It's not just the responsibility of a farmer or the manufacturer or the retailer that ends up getting the product. It is a whole of service approach. We need to really rethink this, and we all have skin in the game, and that's the only way we're going to solve this. Because if there's any break in that chain, then hackers and malicious actors will exploit it and bring down the entire system.
You're absolutely right. And that's why, a bunch of us have been talking about food security as national security, but it's also personal security. And if we all understand that there are different roles we can play in terms of how we handle our own cybersecurity on farm at home, because home and farm are often the same thing, how we
advocate to support our producers to get the resources they need, and have some expectations, you know, for equipment suppliers and other vendors to explain, you know, the value of what they're providing and the safeguards that end users can put into place. We're going to be in a better position down the road. It's really about collaboration to have more preparedness in bringing value to the system and making things a little bit safer for everybody. You're absolutely right.
Which will dovetail nicely into the upcoming episode of this series, where we talk about resilience within supply chains, where we talk about improving and ways we can basically protect and improve our cybersecurity and safety as well. So, gentlemen, I'd like to thank you very much for your time, and we will be picking up this discussion again on the next episode.
Thank you.
Great pleasure. See you next time.
You've been listening to a conversation with researcher Dr. Janos Bochner and cybersecurity analyst Ritesh Kotak. Now, for more information on the Community Safety Knowledge Alliance and its Cybersecurity Capacity in Canadian Agriculture project, check out cskacanada.ca/projects. Now, coming up in part three, Dr. Bochner will be back for a discussion about bad faith actors online, including misinformation and disinformation, in which the target audience can be the non-farming public, or it could be you. That'll be next episode on The Cyber Savvy Farmer. Thanks for listening.